Oh, great. Just what we need. Another football podcast. Hello, and welcome to the Real Football Cast. I'm your host, Dan Tracy, and in the next 45 minutes, I'll be dissecting through all the hot topics in football. Not all the topics in football, otherwise I'd be here until next week's episode. The plan each week is to cut through the nonsense and try to make sense of all the headlines that are on the back pages and rumours that are found on your social media timelines. After laying the groundwork over the summer, I'm delighted to be launching this new project and I hope that you will join me for the ride. We all have to start somewhere and we will do so tonight. However, thankfully, I'm not going to be doing it alone because no one wants to listen to me talking to myself for an hour. I promise you that. So, joining me tonight, I have two real football men. First up is my good friend, Carl Gwilliam. Carl, I hope you're well and are looking forward to the season ahead.
I'm really well, Dan, and can't wait to get going, mate. This is going to be good stuff.
Thanks very much for joining me. Also joining me is James Leverbarrow, who runs the excellent Football and the City website. Although he goes under the name of JS, so that's exactly what I'm going to call him. JS, now I know we've interacted on Twitter, but we've not had the pleasure of audio chat, so I am looking forward to getting your views tonight, and thanks for joining me.
You're highly welcome, and I'm looking forward to the show.
Thanks very much, and I hope the listeners, if they are out there, are also listening, looking forward to it also. Now, this episode is a history-making one. I say history. After the soft launch of last week, which is basically a three-minute intro from yours truly, it's time to really get down to business. I best do some social media bits first, otherwise this will be something of an echo chamber. So first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can. That's on Twitter, at DanTracy1983. It'd be great to get some listeners' questions for next week, or dare I say, just some listeners, so perhaps let's learn to walk before I can run. But ultimately, any activity is welcome, so even if it's you wanting to voice your opinions, then just get in touch. That'll be one of the places where you can find the show each week. Well, you can also find it at the moment at realfootballcast.com, realfootballman.com, soundcloud.com/realfootballman, facebook.com/realfootballman. At the moment, I'm looking for a sponsor for the show, so I haven't got one yet, but while I'm trying to look for one, you can help me out at buymeacoffee.com/realfootball. Apologies for getting the begging bowl out so early, but if you want to show some support with some virtual news change, then it is most welcome. That will hopefully keep you busy enough for starters, and in due course, I will sort out the Acast and iTunes links so you can also share and subscribe through those platforms. Right then, we're now live. And before we look forward, let's take a quick look back at the World Cup. It's not quite a distant memory, as we've hardly had an off-season. And although probably everything has sort of been covered in terms of the World Cup, I think there's been so many column inches, it would be great to get your views also. So, Carl, I'll start with you. The tournament as a whole, how was it for you? Was it one of the best, or if not the best, you can remember in modern times?
Yeah, do you know what, Dan? I actually really got in and enjoyed this World Cup, and I really was pessimistic about it to begin with. You kind of had that feeling that, you know, there wasn't that many great expectations around England. You know, I was kind of thinking, no, it'd be probably be the same, get out of the group and then lose a game. But I've got to say, from the very first game, it was a brilliant World Cup. And I think, you know, every game kind of had something in it that was, you know, made it exciting. VAR really came to life and I think added something that, you know, there was an excitement when you knew something was being looked at by VAR. You kind of thought, oh, here we go, this could be interesting. And so I've got to say, I really enjoyed this World Cup, and probably by Italia 90, I would have to say this was probably the second most memorable World Cup for me. And of course, bonus that, you know, England did as well as we did, you know, started off as a joke that it's coming home, but then there were actually points where you thought, is it actually going to come home? Could this actually happen? But unfortunately, just fell short. But for me, a brilliant World Cup, and fair play to Russia, you know, I think they proved us all wrong in the end, didn't they?
And JS, of course, football did nearly come home. A bit of disappointment in the end. I mean, sure, we'd be looking at the positives from where we got to, because I don't think anyone really gave us a chance to get to the semi-finals. Or do you still think what might have been?
I think we did really well to get there, to be honest. I just have to echo pretty much everything Cole said. I love the tournament. I was a little bit, just a tiny bit too young to remember Italia 19. I think your first World Cup's always great, isn't it? So mine was sort of USA 94. I think this is the best one in my lifetime that I can remember for sure. Like Cole said, it had everything in the tournament. There was barely a bad game in it. I think Denmark, France in the groups, maybe. But yeah, that was about it. And England. Do you know what? I think we exceeded all expectations. I don't care what people say about the quality of opposition. You can only beat what's in front of you. Other teams didn't do well, Spain, Portugal, Germany, etc. So, you know, we did deserve to be there. I think Southgate and his young team inspired a bit of national pride in them again. I don't know, what more can you ask for, to be honest, you know?
Well, yeah, you're right, isn't it? I mean, it's the hope that kills you, but I don't think anyone really had too much hope going into the tournament. So it was just refreshing, really. And I think it sort of, you know, united the nation. It was great that everyone got behind the sort of the bandwagon, which was coming home. It's just a shame we couldn't get over the line. But, you know, had anyone offered you a semi-final going into the tournament, you'd have bit their arm off. It just means, ultimately, that disappointment is greater because you've not got to the very, very end. So it's sort of a mixed bag, really. But there are far more positives than there are negatives. And Cole, just going back to what you said about VAR, it was very much castigated domestically because of the I say its performance, but the way it was used in the FA Cup. Is it because the English refs weren't getting to grips with it correctly? They don't know what they're doing. I mean, it just seems so much more polished. It's won a lot more people over now, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at the end of that World Cup now, if someone said to you VAR was going to be used in the Premier League this season, I don't think anyone would moan too much because you go, well, this will add something now. And let's face it, most of the decisions they got were right. And as you say, they must massively polished it up. I mean, Dan, we all know, don't we? We was on the wrong end of what was a farcical night in the FA Cup at Wembley, where every decision was just like, what is going on here? You know, what is happening? And if this is how it's going to work, then they can forget it. But at the World Cup, you was excited by the thought of it. You know, when you're seeing tackles in the penalty box and you're like, oh, they're having a look at it. Oh, what's going to happen? I mean, the great one was the Sanchez tackle in that game where the ref gives a penalty and you kind of well, and then they look at it for VAR and what a tackle it was. And without that technology there to look at that, Colombia probably go a goal down from the penalty, and the defender, you know, we miss out on what was a brilliant defensive tackle made and just getting the ball. So if that's how VAR can be used going forward, I don't see anyone moaning about it. We had the odd mistake, of course you will, because some of it is still down to a referee's interpretation of the law. But let's face it, most of it was right. And as we get used to it and it's used more and more often, referees will get better, the decisions will get better, and then it can only be a plus, can't it? And let's face it, did it disrupt any game massively? Not really. Didn't ruin my excitement of any game.
No, I mean,
just going to jump in. I actually agree on the whole. I thought it was used really well. And yeah, like you two, because, you know, we all support the same club. We all saw how it was used. And I wouldn't even just say that game at Wembley. I think in a few of the games, it sort of ruined the flow of it a little bit. But yeah, I agree. I think it was used really well. And actually, I would also like to add, the quality of the refereeing at the World Cup on the whole was actually very good this year. Obviously, you're going to get games that are, you know, not as good as others, but some of them are exceptional. I liked how, what was his name? Was it Bjorn Kuipers?
Yes,
you know, the Dutch guy.
Yes, that's the one.
The Dutch guy who basically completely didn't stand for any of Neymar's shithousing, and it worked perfectly, didn't it? I mean, he was. I don't know how he didn't get the final, actually, because I thought he was exceptional, you know.
Yeah, I mean, they always say a good referee is one that you don't really notice because he just lets the game carry on, but you're absolutely right in the sense that he weren't sort of taking any of Neymar's nonsense. And that leads me on to Neymar's PSG teammate, Kylian Mbappe. It was France's tournament, and it looks like we could be witnessing a new era, one that is arguably going to be led by that young talent. He lit up the tournament and he has his whole career in front of him. When you consider his age, Cole, it's almost quite scary at how good he can end up being. I mean, not only Is he good now? He could realistically be playing until, I don't know, the 2030 World Cup, maybe even further on. So, you know, it's something to make you feel old, chaps. But if we focus on his talents and the fact he's going to probably run right again at PSG this season, the burning question is, Cole, how long can the French outfit keep him for? Because surely he's going to get bored soon of hammering the likes of sort of Dijon and Nantes week in, week out, isn't he? So how long can you see him at PSG?
Yeah, you kind of think they've probably maybe got another season with him, don't you, before one of the big guns, Barca or Real Madrid, decide, right, we're having this guy. Because when you look at his numbers as well over the last couple of seasons, they're really impressive for a player of his age. You know, his goals are always in the double figures, his stats are up there, his assists are up there as well. He is a real talent, isn't he? Scary. I mean, his pace, you know, when he got that penalty in the World Cup, it's just like, just give him the ball. It was a bit like similar to what we used to do with Bale. Give him the ball and let him go. Let him do his own thing, because the guy's going to tear this team apart. And you can actually see fear in players and teams when he gets the ball. You can see him go, we're in big trouble here. This guy could set. He could have everything, and he could do whatever he wants. Let's just hope he keeps his head screwed on. But I see him at Madrid or Barca, you know, at the end of next season. Because you want the glamour ties, wouldn't you? You want to be in the glamour league. And although PSG are in there, I don't think the French league is considered a glamour league. So I think a move to La Liga with one of those two giants is beckoning very quickly. And he'll probably follow Neymar, because I don't think Neymar won't be there much longer, will he? So what a double swoop that could be for someone, eh? Neymar and Mbappe in one.
Well, absolutely, yeah. I mean, there's no reason why they couldn't both go to Real Madrid next summer, which is quite an ominous thought. But, JS, if we sort of consider Mbappe at the start of an era, we might be also witnessing the end of one. That is in the form of Cristiano Ronaldo and Lionel Messi. Both men failed to make a real impact in Russia. Well, it must be said that now Juventus star Ronaldo had an excellent game against Spain in the group stage. But for you, how long do you think those two have got in the international tank? And also, what impact do you think Ronaldo will have in Turin? Can you see an 8th straight Serie A title for the old lady this season?
First off, yes, absolutely. Because I think Dybala and Alexandro are now all of a sudden not itching for an exit, you know, because Ronaldo's joined, they don't want to leave all of a sudden. I think Alexandro was sort of, you know, trying to go to a sort of, I hate using anything like that about leagues, but, you know, like a slightly more competitive league, probably a higher salary in somewhere, you know, that's currently a little bit more competitive. Having said that, they've got one of the best managers in world football. Why would they want to leave? Ronaldo joining them has just, you know, stopped all of that movement out. So, yeah, they're definitely going to win the league again. I think they actually will have a genuinely good chance at the European title this year as well. I think it's probably going to be between them and Madrid. I mean, you consider what they've been in, like, two of the last three, four finals anyway, so they're not exactly shabby. They've just come up against one of the great club teams in history in this current Madrid one. Right, as for Ronaldo and Messi, I kind of feel like those two are undoubtedly great. They're two of the greats, if you were, you know, like the footballing gods, whatever. But I do feel that through no fault of their own, they have sort of monopolised the narrative about football over the last 10 years. It's almost like they've become individual units of measurement for everything else in football. It's like, are they as good as Messi or Ronaldo? No, Neymar straight away compared to those two. And I actually feel like Mbappe coming through and then slowly starting to wind down is a very good thing. I think it's healthy for football discussion for a new generation. Echoing what Cole said, I think Mbappe's got everything. I think his nearest comparison is probably Ronaldo, the Brazilian Ronaldo. I think he's probably in that kind of league. I'm not normally one to sort of make quick reactions on players, but I actually think he's he's going to be one of the greats. I actually think he's that good.
I mean, Carl, if you look at his price tag, what was it, best part of £100 million or euros, whatever currency you want to use, is there some weight with that price tag, or does it still turn out to be value for money even at his age? Because when you consider what a specimen he is, you're probably going to get at least four more seasons out of him at Juventus, aren't you? So it could be titles 8, 9, 10, 11 in Serie A, couldn't it, really?
Yeah, I mean that's what the guys who do the fitness tests are saying, that Ronaldo's actually getting younger, aren't they? You know, it's like World Cup, he had a body of a 20-year-old or the fitness levels of a 20-year-old. And when he did his Juventus fitness test, they're saying that he's now got the fitness of a 19-year-old.
It's like Benjamin Button. He's a footballing Benjamin Button.
He's an
absolute animal, isn't he? And I think, you know, I've said it before, some people would look at that 100 million and go, 100 million for someone of that age? But when you consider the whole package that Ronaldo brings you as a club, Juventus have nearly made that money back in merchandise sales already.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's where it comes in when you buy someone like Ronaldo, because you're buying a brand, you're not buying a player. And that brand will bring you more financial rewards than the money you've laid out. And like as you've said, Dan, you'd tip them as favourites for the Champions League, and you'd definitely tip them for their potential double in their league straight away. You'd go, well, you can see Juventus wiping the ball out there straight away. You can see that with those players staying. When you bring Ronaldo in, let's face it, that it's a recipe for success, isn't it? He's going to take you to the next stratosphere. And that the outlay is nothing compared to what they're getting.
JS, you sort of referenced about competitive leagues a minute ago and you sort of loathe to use that phrase, but are we in a sort of danger of seeing glorified SPLs across Europe? Let's say France, Germany, Italy, you know, Juventus are running away from things, as are Bayern Munich, as are PSG.
Mm. I
mean, from a health point of view, that's not great for European leagues, is it?
No, it's not, to be honest. But then, you know, ironically, I think over the last, I don't know what it was, 20 years, but they've all had more winners than the Premier League has.
True,
so,
yes.
You know, I don't know. I mean, to a certain extent, you could argue that in Spain, so perhaps the best measurement is just Europe, isn't it? You know. I don't know. Do you know what? I sort of took someone to task last week because they were talking about La Liga and it not being anywhere near the standard of the Premier League. And then I sort of pointed out that over the last 10 years, they've had most of the finalists and most of the winners in both of the two major European competitions.
That's
and that
right.
was spread that was spread between four clubs. So, you know, Atletico and Sevilla, and then obviously Madrid and Barca. So I'm not sure I quite buy it, because you've got other pretty decent teams like Valencia, and, you know, you get occasional ones that get money chucks in, like Malaga or whatever as well. And it's not like, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? It's like people always say this, but then would the teams that got relegated last year in the Premier League, how well would they actually get on in La Liga? I mean, they'd be mid-table, wouldn't they, really, at best? So, I don't know. I mean, as for France, you mentioned Dijon, their mustard. Sorry about that.
There we go. And so it begins.
So, yeah.
Another 9 months
But yeah, it's clearly not healthy, is it? But then neither is the Premier League. I mean, you know, Spurs have done quite well to break into that, what was the elite top four group. And then obviously City have now had so much money chucked and it is a top six. But as for it being competitive, yeah, you could argue the teams lower down are slightly tougher to play than some of those teams. But actually, it's only going to be one of three teams that ever win the league in England anyway, isn't it? So, you know, are we actually kidding ourselves? Is the Premier League actually more competitive when it comes to the thing that matters, which is actually winning it, you know? I mean, surely that should still be the benchmark, winning the Premier League, not just being in it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, it's like people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. We sort of moan about the competitive nature of European leagues, but when you sort of really scratch away the surface of the Premier League, it's not ultra competitive, is it? It's the fallacy of,
not
the,
really.
Of the sort of the hype machine, which is the Big Six. It's still not a wide open league, is it? And you could even argue it's of those six, only two or three are going to win it each season. So, you know,
it's going to be, until the money runs out at one or other of the clubs, it's always going to be City, United and Chelsea. You know, Arsenal, Spurs and Liverpool will sort of challenge some years. But as it stands, with the kind of money those three clubs, maybe Liverpool, the amount of money they're chucking at things, and they're, you know, their fans talk a lot about net spend and all the rest of it, but I'm sure they must have blasted through the Coutinho money and then some by now this summer. You know what I mean? Because it was $75 million for Van Dijk. They've added Keita, Fabinho, Alisson was how much? Is he about 60, 50 something?
Yeah, 60 something mil, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, so that, I mean, Coutinho, they got a hell of a lot of money for it. It was about $150 million, so. But then you think about it, they've done the vast majority of that just on Becker and Van Dijk, haven't they? So when you add Fabinho, but yeah, anyway, that's a slightly different point. But yeah, realistically, it's only going to be City, Chelsea, and United, isn't it? You know, I mean, Leicester was, let's be honest, that was an amazing, incredible story, but the chance of that happening again anytime soon is so minimal, aren't they? You know.
Yeah, I mean, almost they've sort of ruined it for everyone else because they caught the big clubs cold that year, and I think the big clubs have said, that's never happening again. You know, let's spend as much as we can. That situation can never happen. And almost the Big Six is almost like a three of the three, and it sort of fluidly interchanges each year. But let's sort of push it on a bit and actually look at this season ahead. We'll talk about the Big Six and what they're going to be doing further on. But let's just go back to Sunday, which was the Community Shield. Now, I, to be honest, had the best intentions of watching the game because you go into it thinking, oh, it's the Charity Shield. But then you come into the conclusion it's, oh, it's the Charity Shield. So I fell asleep after the first goal and got woken up by the second. Therefore, I can deduce that, from what I know, it was a relatively routine win for City. Carl, what, if anything, have we learned from this? I mean, let's be honest, it's nothing more than a glorified friendly, really, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone now that, you know, Charity Shield doesn't hold that kind of nostalgia as it did in the 80s, say, did it, where it was a real glamour, a showcase fixture. And now it is just seen as another pre-season friendly that no one really worries about winning other than a Mourinho when he wants to try and make a point to the press and claim he's won a trophy. but from there, you just got the impression that City and for going to take some team that stopped this side, because with the resources that they've got, and when you consider now you're throwing Mahrez into that mixture as well, then that is frightening. You know, they had Kyle Walker and Stones back and they looked fresh and strong again. Chelsea are kind of, from what you saw, Chelsea weren't really taking it seriously. But then the worry for them is that, I mean, that could have been a 5 or 6 nil scoreline very easily. And that could have really got embarrassing for Chelsea at one point, because they were getting torn apart left, right and centre by City. And if they'd had their shooting boots on a little bit more than they did, then it could have got a slightly embarrassing. And luckily it stayed at 2-0 for them, but they were never in it. And that would, I guess they'd probably be slightly worried coming away from that because they looked sloppy. They were giving the ball away quite often, getting caught at the back. You know, Willian looked good at points, but are they going to keep him? So yeah, you can't read too much in it, but I think you saw from it that City, if someone stopped, I'll tell you what, if you get close to City this year, you've done well. I think that was the take from it, because they're going all guns blazing again by the looks of it.
JS, Chelsea looked at half pace, but I don't think you can put too much of the blame on Mauricio Sarri when you consider he's been in the job for, what, 3 weeks now. So, that said, does the blame have to lay with the Chelsea hierarchy for not sorting out their managerial situation sooner?
Oh, yeah, that was a shambles, wasn't it? You know, It's going to sound biased because I'm a Spurs fan, but I just hate how Chelsea are run. I just don't think it's a healthy thing for football. It's kind of like that attitude of, well, if it's not working, we'll just, you know, sod it off and buy whatever we need, act how we want. The Conte thing was absolutely disgraceful, to be honest. They should have clarified his future more than a week before they hired Sarri or whatever it was. You know, it was hideous. I mean, Conte was still sort of saying stuff just before the start of pre-season that he still didn't know, and you just think, like, that's just not a way to run a football club, is it? You know, at all. I mean, Conte's hardly an angel, is he? I mean, that whole thing about sort of letting Diego Costa know he wasn't going to be there or part of the team next season by text was particularly classless. And, you know, and he did sort of have a bit of the petty side about him, you know, like phasing players like David Luiz out or leaving Antonio Rudiger out for a few games when they'd sort of questioned him or whatever. I mean, it's just, I don't know, because I'm not inside there, but it does seem like a bit of a poisoned club at the moment, you know. I mean, their owner's in Israel, they've stopped building the new stadium. I don't know, they just look a bit of a mess. They don't know if they're still selling some of their players. I don't know. What do you think about them at the moment?
Well, all is not perfect. I mean, they've appointed a good manager, but what he can do in the next couple of days, I think it's not really who he buys, it's who he can keep. You've got someone like Thibaut Courtois not turning out for training. That rings out very loud alarm bells, doesn't it? So, that said, I mean, if Tottenham don't get their house in order between now and Thursday, then it could be that Chelsea pipped Tottenham to fourth. So, you know, and that in itself can be deemed as a relative success. So it could be a gunfight between those two London clubs for the Champions League scraps next season. But it'd be an interesting one to see at Stamford Bridge with Sarri. You know, anyone who comes into the Premier League is sort of given a bit of a honeymoon period, but I don't think really for a club like Chelsea, he'll have that much time, really. I think he has to hit the ground running. And if you look at Sunday's result and performance, that doesn't intimate to sort of, you know,
which I think's a shame, actually, because he, you know, in an era of pretty much every club playing a variation of, you know, or a derivative of tiki-taka football, you know, possession-based football, 4-2-3-1 or a variation on a theme, he sort of did that really interesting 4-3-3 at Napoli, restricted width, hit on the counter. And in this era, it's quite revolutionary because it was actually working against the possession-based football. He's finally found a way of breaking that down, which is incredible. And I'm hoping he can bring a bit of that into the Premier League. But it's going to be tough, isn't it, to do it with that squad of players where so many players seem to be unhappy there. Maybe he can turn it around. Maybe he can lift them all. You know, I don't know. Who knows? I wouldn't ever rule them out with the players they've got. If they keep them all, if they're all still there tomorrow, why couldn't they challenge for the title? You know what I mean? They've got the talent. They've got Hazard and Kante and all the rest of them. Willian looks an incredibly gifted footballer. Another one that was a bit weird when Conte didn't seem to want to play him every game as well, but I don't know. If he gets it all together, I reckon Chelsea are going to be there or thereabouts right at the top. If he doesn't, they're going to finish sixth again, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Chelsea, it's almost as if he needs time to implement his ideas and get the squad to look like something that he can call his own. But because of the way Chelsea run, it's boom and bust, isn't it? So, Cole, Chelsea fans, you know, they'll win the league one year, they'll flat to deceive the next, but they don't seem to mind, do they? Because they're getting those ultimate highs and they sort of learn to live with the lows, don't they? So where do you think they're going to be? Is it going to be the top end of the pendulum or the bottom bit?
They're a strange club, aren't they? They always look like a club that's a week away from the crisis, don't they? And then they kind of live on that edge where it's like, is it all happy there? Is it all crumbling behind the scenes? And then they'll have a season where they go and win the double again and you go, oh, this is the Chelsea we know. Everything's happy. Oh, the manager's gone 2 weeks into the into the new season. So they've kept Hazard. I mean, he's the player that if they'd lost Hazard, you would have worried for them going, well, you ain't going to replace that player because he's amazing. And if he'd gone, what a loss for them that would have been. So keeping him's great. Can they keep hold of Willian, players like that before the deadline? You know, I know Mourinho is a big admirer of Willian and wants to try and get something done there, but I can't see that happening now. So if they keep them players, attacking, you'd always fancy Chelsea against anyone. And they're the sort of side that you never write off. You kind of think they could pull results out of the bag. And as you said, you wouldn't back against them being in that top four and pushing for a title challenge. But if it goes horribly wrong, you could see them sixth or seventh. And the new guy would be gone by January and they'll be looking for their next man. You know, Hiddink will probably be coming in for another stint there, someone like that.
So they
either go either way from me. They're either at the top pushing or they're mid-table and it's all going drastically wrong.
Yeah, I'm with Cole on that one. It's sort of, it's a weird one because I'm usually pretty good at kind of working out roughly where people are going to finish pre-season. But with Chelsea this year, there's just no tell on it, is there? It wouldn't surprise you if they won the title or finished seventh, which is a really, it's a really weird thing to say about a club.
Yeah, it is.
So.
Well, let's hope, as a Spurs fan, it's seventh. But like you say, they probably will go and win the Premier League now. But talking about who's going to win the Premier League, Carl, you intimated that you reckon Man City are going to do it again. JS, no team has defended the crown since United when they won three in a row back in 2009. For you, is it going to be more of the same? Will they win it at a canter once more? Or do you reckon there's going to be at least something of a challenge this time around?
I think it will be a little bit tighter because it's going to be... It's going to be next to impossible to replicate their record-breaking season 2 years running, unless they do, and then you probably have to say this current side are probably the best single Premier League side in history. But I can't see past them, you know. I can't see. They're winning it again, for sure, you know. I mean, they looked fluid the other day, and they didn't even have De Bruyne in the team, so...
Yeah, obviously, yeah, it's a very scary proposition, the way they're sort of playing. They clicked in pre-season, didn't they? They strolled past Chelsea. Yeah. Phil Foden looks exciting, Cole, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. Yeah, he had a really good game. And there was points where, you know, he played a great ball. And I know this sounds, you know, we've had over the years a decent amount of players. But there are some times where you look at a young player and think, oh, why can't we be bringing someone through that looks as exciting as that, because he really does look like a, you know, a real talent for them.
What you mean, like Harry Kane?
Well, yes, Harry Kane is the only one. I mean, we've had a few, we like the Onimars and that, though. When they kind of look like they're coming through, you kind of look at them and watch them and kind of go, I don't really see what the buzz is about here in terms of a game changer or a player with real ability.
Whereas
Foden, you're looking going, yeah, he's got the through balls, he can run with it, looks strong on the ball, and you're really kind of thinking he does look exciting.
Foden looks right, doesn't he? A bit like Mbappe, you know what I mean? You just know some players are at a certain level. Phil Foden's there. I mean, we've got Winks, but this is going to sound really harsh because he always looks good and he stepped up when we needed him to on the whole last year. But I can't help feeling I don't see quite enough in his game. I feel like he's probably going to level out at sort of like a Ryan Mason level. So meaning he's an exceptionally good footballer, but is not going to be sort of on Kane's level or whatever. And like you say, Foden... I think he's just got everything, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does. I mean, the only thing I will say, Dan, I think the team who really... I still see City winning it, but the team I really feel, I think, are going to push them, and I think they've got City's number, and City are scared of them, is Liverpool.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely right.
I think Liverpool scare the life out of City.
Yeah.
Those Champions League semi-finals and the two league games they had, City are scared of Liverpool. Liverpool have got them. They know how to play them. And you can see the fear in City when they play them. And if the transfers they've brought in work out, then Liverpool, I think, will be City's closest challengers this year.
I agree. As long as they... It's another thing, though. If they go deep in the Champions League again, it seemed to catch up on them, didn't it? Whereas,
yeah, it did. Yeah,
I don't know. City sort of still look quite. I didn't really understand that game. That was a bit of a weird one. I don't know if they were a bit shell shocked from the sort of bus getting smashed up and then the atmosphere inside Anfield, but they just sort of looked a bit rabbit in the headlights. But then I totally get what you're saying. I do think Liverpool. I think the top four is going to be exactly the same as it is last year. City are going to win it, but then I wouldn't like to say what order it will be, Spurs, Liverpool, United. I think a big factor will be when those various teams get knocked out of the Champions League, if they do, obviously.
That brings me on to Manchester United. It seems that all is not well at Old Trafford. Jose Mourinho is complaining again. That's nothing new, but he's also renowned for three-year cycles when he's in charge of a club. Are we seeing it again, JS? Is this the beginning of the end of his tenure at Old Trafford?
I think it is, or it's like a turning point. He'll either completely turn it down, but I just don't feel like Mourinho has that kind of thing in his locker. He's only got those kind of elite managers only have certain places they'll go, and I think realistically, we need to see how Tuchel gets on at PSG, but I can see him going to like PSG or, I don't know, Juventus if Max Allegri goes to Real, if Lopetegui, I don't know how you pronounce his name, Lopetegui, you know who I mean, the shambolic appointment of him from Spain or what. I think he lost his mojo at Real. I think he lost the dressing room, and I think they basically hacked him to bits. And he sort of turned from having that sort of cockiness where it was almost endearing because you kind of believed he believed it, whereas now it just seems to have been like he doesn't seem to believe it anymore, and it seems to have turned to just pure on kind of snarky arrogance, and it's not a healthy or attractive thing. Is you know, I remember the famous story was about Ramos, basically. Ramos, who else, let's be honest, in that Madrid dressing room, basically took him apart in front of all of the Madrid players, basically saying, you're fucking worthless, you're shit and all this, you never even played, what the do you know, and all the rest of it. And I think that kind of experience just shot him to bits, and he just hasn't looked the same since leaving them, to be honest.
Yeah, personally, I think he'll go at the end of this season, because it's just the way he goes, and he burns all his bridges, fizzles out, another elite club will take him on, repeat the cycle. And like you say, there'll be two more clubs that he'll work for, and then he'll go into international management because he's got no more clubs to work for. And that's the way he'll just fizzle out, because you can tell he's lacklustre. He's not the special one anymore, is he? He's just tired and malignant. He's just... It's still
pantomime
and theatre, isn't it? So, I'm bored of it.
He had a kind of Clough love about him at first.
He's
cocky, but you had to come away and say, do you know what? That is one cocky bloke, but any great with it. And he actually, as you say, he actually believed in himself. I'm the special one. Now he's moaning, he's just moaning, it turns you against him, where you go, oh, shut up, Joe, say, you know, get on with it. You've got one of the best, richest clubs in the world, deal with it. But before, he had a Clough love, where you kind of hated him, but you actually admired him and loved him, really. But
as Spurs fans, you know, like, I couldn't help having a sneaking admiration for him, even when he was sort of cleaning up at Chelsea, because do you know what? You just made the absolutely perfect comparison on that. He was like Clough. He was like a Portuguese Clough. He was cocky, but he had a swagger and a sparkle. Now he just seems like a slightly desperate old man, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, he's always moaning about something, isn't he? But if we look ahead to the weekend, the Premier League starts. The one fixture that jumps off the page is obviously Bournemouth versus Cardiff. No, I'm joking. It's Arsenal versus Man City. It's a trip into the unknown for Arsenal as they play their first competitive game under new boss Unai Emery. Carl, can you see the Gunners firing on all cylinders, or will it be a harsh pep talk for Man City?
Hey!
I think City could tear Arsenal to shreds at the weekend. I really do. I think this will be a comfortable. I can see City coming away with a 3-0 win, to be honest. I don't think Arsenal have probably added enough that's going to cause a team like City a problem. They're all bedding in, still, you know, a new system to try and get used to. And yeah, for me, I see City coming out of that comfortable winners, even at the Emirates, to be honest. I don't think Arsenal are going to cause them much of a problem.
I mean, it was 3-0 there last season, wasn't it? But that was man versus boy, wasn't it? That was just after the Carabao Cup debacle, where they got thumped. But, you know, I don't think Arsenal will embarrass themselves, but for the points you've made, you know, it's a new manager, new system, new players. 4 out of 5 have never tasted Premier League action. I know Socrates was on loan at Liverpool for a short spell, so he's not alien to the Premier League, but it's still going to be a bit of a test of his sort of new surroundings. So, you know, JS, how do you see Arsenal sort of panning out over this season? I mean, it's sort of, like I say, the unknown. It's a bit of a free hit in a sense, because after sort of the doom and gloom of the last sort of few years of Wenger, there's got to be some sort of light at the end of the tunnel. But is that light going to be sort of nearer or further away?
I actually think Arsenal have done all right in the transfer window. But Bent Leno is I actually watch a lot of Bundesliga. He is an absolutely fantastic keeper. Obviously is never ever getting in that German side until Manuel Neuer retires, but and then probably, to be fair, actually until Ter Stegen retires, and I think they're about the same age, so that bang goes that one. I think Lichtsteiner was a really, really good addition. I know he's getting on. I don't expect him to be there to be a first-team regular. I think that was literally just to bring in a bit of experience and a cool head. Somebody who's won stuff and played at big clubs for some of the youngsters they've still got at the club. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was, you know, he was sort of doing his coaching badges at the same time and there was a sort of job offer at the end of it. You know, I think it was that kind of thing. Torreira looks a really good addition as well. Socrates, I actually speak to a lot of Bundesliga fans and I've spoken to a few BVB fans about it. They were A, happy to get rid of him. B, they couldn't believe they actually got any money at all for him, let alone 18.5 million. And C, they all think it's a bit rubbish. So that's probably not the best addition, judging on how his own fans thought about him. I think Emery is an exceptional manager. He struggled with the sort of weight of everything at PSG. But if you look at what he did at Sevilla, that was quite astonishing. And I think Arsenal's a good... It's his level club. He's better at building things. But I don't think it's going to be a one-season fix. I think it's going to take him 2, 3, 4 years to properly implement everything there. So I don't see them being serious challengers. I don't think they'll get in the top four this year, but I do think they'll finish fifth. But I actually think the game at the weekend is going to be a 1-1 draw, just because there's a few elements. They've got a lot of points to prove. The players, Emery will get them on side because of this change of ownership thing. He'll tell them to go out and fight for the fans. Not change of ownership, sorry. I mean, with like Kroenke, you know, buying the whole club and taking all the shares off the Arsenal fans and all the rest of it, which I thought was shameful, to be honest, but that's another thing. But I don't know why, I've just got it in my head it's going to be a 1-1 draw.
Well, you know, strange things have happened. You might be right. You never know with the start of the season, especially with so many players coming back from the World Cup. That's going to sort of jumble everything up in terms of lineups, isn't it? So the first week, exactly, from a sort of prediction point of view, is going to be a bit of a crapshoot. So I'm steering well clear of any accumulators this week. I know that much. But Carl, if we stay on the theme of Arsenal, JS has just intimated about Stan Kroenke. What's your take on him becoming the sole shareholder at the club? Is that going to give Arsenal the launch pad to get back in the top bracket of teams in both England and Europe? Now they'll be privately owned, or is this going to add to the sort of toxic atmosphere that's already at the Emirates? Because there's a lot of Kroenke out, isn't there? So if they don't get the success that a sort of new owner or a change of ownership model will hopefully bring, that only adds more pressure, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've already seen today, you know, the early signs from the fan base isn't good, is it? They're really not happy. about this guy, you know, taking full ownership at a club. So when you start off, you know, in, with that sort of feeling against you, then that's a kind of worry for them. But he will know if he does take over that he'll need to get results on the pitch to you know, put people on his side. So you kind of think he may have a bit of a plan where he may have to kind of stretch out a little bit and give Emre the players that he maybe wants to start doing that. But yeah, who knows with that one? That, again, it's one of them you can't call, can you? Arsenal are one of those clubs, again, that you're always feeling they're a couple of days or a week away from real crisis. And if they get off to a poor start, then we kind of know the explosions that come from Arsenal fan TV. And, you know, just when you think they've got rid of their biggest enemy, you know, they all wanted Wenger out, it was all that. They've got that. They've got that wish. They've now got a new man in charge. And now they throw Kroenke taking full ownership, which kind of puts them back in meltdown almost before a ball's been kicked. So if they have a good season, then that might ease him in. And if he makes a couple of shrewd signings and they start, you know, creeping back up the table, then I'm sure they'll take to him. But again, if they finish sixth or something and they don't look anywhere near challenging, or, you know, it doesn't work for Emre, then you can see the meltdown start happening again for him.
Well, at least Arsenal Fan TV will have something to crow about, so at least they're happy. You know, there's one good news story. Wenger's gone, so they need a new target to whinge about. So Kroenke will probably get
That's anger. It'd be exactly. Kroenke out now, blood fam.
Absolutely,
you know.
blood fam. the transfer window slams shut domestically on Thursday. We've covered most of the top six, bar Tottenham, who haven't signed anyone, so they're not actually worth talking about. But for you, JS and Cole, outside of the top six, who's had the best window in terms of signings?
I mean, it's clearly Liverpool. Well, it is and it isn't. I'm not actually sure either Keita or Fabinho are actually upgrades on Emre Can, to be honest. But, you know, I'm happy to be proved wrong. I mean, you don't want your rivals to do well, but you don't. You also want to see good football in the league, don't you? And you want to see good players. Can I just sorry to go back? Can I just make a really quick point about Kroenke
and his
takeover of Arsenal? I was actually really pissed off about that. I mean, Arsenal fans are a little bit like the boy who cried wolf. They complain so hard, so loudly and so often that you almost don't know when it's justified anymore. But in this case, it is. I read a tweet about a guy who had owned shares in Arsenal for like, it was 40 years or something. He only owned one share, which was £1. But it gave him the right, and he went to all the annual board meetings, or, you know, those sort of committee things, whatever they are. He was able to hold the owners to account, the manager. They've lost that, and it's another nail in the coffin for me, for English football, for the working classes that built the game. It's just shocking. It's shocking. I can't believe this has happened and continuing to happen to our game. That is another step of taking that club away from the community that has built them. And even as a Spurs fan, I'm completely on their side about this. I think it's absolutely shameful that that's been allowed to happen.
Unfortunately, I think the horse has already bolted in terms of sort of clubs and communities, isn't it? I think the genie's well out of control. So it's not ideal, but, you know, I think this is the lie of the land at the moment. And, you know, I think
it is.
It's just Sky drives a sort of product, and we all feed it.
Absolutely right. It's bad, but unlike in Germany, we don't really get organised and protest about things, so they don't happen. They've still got like 50 plus one ownership.
Right.
You know, I don't know if you saw last season, but the horror they introduced Monday night games instead of weekend games. They got organised. They protested. The clubs also hated it. So now they're only going to have weekend games again, which I think is nice, you know. Whereas we've got literally every day of the week now, haven't we? So, you know,
we have, and that keeps us busy though. Cole, I'll ask you about the transfer window from outside the top six. Who's had the best bit of summer spending for you?
Do you know the team I'm really interested to see and think could cause some upset is Wolves?
Yes, it is
Wolves. I really feel Wolves, they look like they mean business, don't they? And obviously we know the guy who's there with them can bring in players that a club like that normally wouldn't get. But they've signed some players where you think, do you know what, if it clicks and these players click, they could be a real surprise package.
Agreed. I agree. I don't think they're going down. And I'd actually quite comfortably say the thing about Fulham, who have also quietly made some exceptional signings. When you look at Seri and Maxime Le Marchand is actually a very, very good defender. And then obviously Schürrle, and they've got Sessegnon.
That was massive, wasn't it? Keeping Sessegnon, absolutely huge.
Yeah, huge. Yeah, I can honestly see both of those clubs being definitely mid-table, maybe even a little bit higher. I think what they've done, it's going to push other clubs like Huddersfield down a bit, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think Cardiff are going to struggle, aren't they? But yeah, I'm with you. You know, you look at getting players like Rui Patricio in. It's astonishing. Ditto Fulham. I think both of those have easily had the best transfer windows, possibly even arguably in the whole Premiership, given their status as newly promoted team.
And Carl, talking of money bags, Salford City. Now, they've been putting some noses out of joint, both north and south of the border, with their spending powers of late. Do you find there's always an element of mistrust when a team tries to spend their way out of non-league? It's as if it's viewed as like not the honourable way to get promotion. It's like as if teams in League Two are sort of overprotective of their spot and they don't like a new boy coming in. What's your take of all things Salford?
Yes, it's that thing, isn't it? It's that little green-eyed monster, isn't it? And I think we could probably feel kind of similar to people. You know, there's a jealousy there with us and Chelsea getting Abramovich because you kind of think, oh, what could have been? You know, we know he was looking at us at one point and then went down the road and brought them. And you think, oh, if only he'd taken us over, it would have been us winning leagues, doubles, Champions Leagues. But this is the problem, isn't it? You know, as much as it doesn't sometimes seem right, the bottom line is they've now got the money, haven't they, to invest. And they're clearly doing it in the right way. And it's going to take them into the Football League. There's no stopping that happening. They are going to get there with the backing they've got, with the, you know, the United guys behind them. I don't know how I feel about that. I kind of understand those smaller teams when they're Salford are getting picked every week in the FA Cup to be shown live, because the BBC basically just want to get the Nevilles and Butts and Skulls some coverage there. I kind of do agree that those fixtures should be spread around those other sides and they should all be given a chance to earn some money and be on telly. So that I don't agree with. That I feel is very unfair. But in terms of them going up and going through the leagues, what can you do? You know, they've got that investment. And as much as you may not like it, it's one of them in it where you're not going to be able to stop it, unfortunately. That is a train going full steam. And if you, those that are smaller in their way are just going to get smashed out of the way. You know, if you've got a player that could potentially help them, they'll go and buy them because they can offer them more than you. It's unfortunate, but they're going to be a Football League side and they'll try to start coming up through the divisions a bit like a Wimbledon, I guess. You know, the ground will be developed as much as it can be. There's not much you can do, really. You know, they're not doing anything illegal as far as we know. so, yeah, you just have to kind of deal with it. But I do agree that that club shouldn't be getting the exposure it's actually getting on some of the TV channels for FA Cups and that, because they're being done. There's programmes about them on Sky. There's BBC are picking them. And that is unfair to the other teams where that money should be getting shared around.
Agreed.
Yep, you're right. I mean, their destination is League Two and we've reached our destination, which is the end of the show. So it's been a fantastic 50 minutes or so, just a little bit over than a first half of 45 minutes. We've gone into injury time, but that's absolutely fine. I'm not tired. And I just need to wrap up and thank my guests. So the first full episode, Carl, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks ever so much. And I hope you'll join me throughout the season.
Yeah, been a pleasure, mate. Been brilliant.
Thanks ever so much. And JS, likewise, it's been great chatting to you. And I hope you'll be keen to do it again soon.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Dan. Cheers.
No problem, mate. So then, it just leaves me to say, my name's Dan Tracy, this is The Real Football Cast. Until next time, goodbye.